Coming up on today's episode, Tim gets some inside Starship details from Elon. Tesla gives us a holiday update, a little Christmas present, and we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to in 2020 and beyond. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff that's happening today that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous. Welcome to 2020. I am Joe Scott from the Answers to Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from not space, really, or anything. I don't know. And also we have Ben Solens.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. Tim, when you actually get to visit space, are you not going to be the everyday astronaut anymore? You're just going to be the, like, astronaut?
No, I'll be like the... Then I'll just be the everyday Earth guy.
Yeah, you'll be like the actual astronaut, not the everyday astronaut.
Well, then you'd have to go to space every day to prove your bona fides.
That's... See, oh. I can't live up to that, you know? Too high standards. Hey, we better hop right into this. We have the most important thing to talk about. Are we at the start of a new decade or not?
Oh, man.
So, yeah, all right. So the reason why this gets brought up is because we've had so many comments in our videos, I know I have anyway, about 2020 isn't the beginning of a new decade. It actually starts in 2021 because there was no year zero. And I'm looking at you, comrade, in Discord. and I think Veritasium, Derek actually had said, put it really well. He was basically like, look, yeah, technically, sure. But by all social standards, by all psychological metrics, the decade begins in 2020. Like, that's part of the decade. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
You're 100%. Both right. Here's the deal. So a decade is just a period of 10 years. So every day is the start of a new decade. Every year is the start of a new decade. Mm-hmm. Even year one was the start of a new decade. That decade didn't end until year 11. That's the confusion, right? But a decade is just a period of time. I worked in tech for 2 decades. I didn't happen to start, well, I kind of started, but I didn't happen to really start on the New Year's, right? Mm-hmm. But if somebody said, well, it's not the 202nd decade, that starts next year, they would be correct, right? But no one says that. No one gives a crap about the 202nd decade. So
yeah, there you go.
I think you can have it both ways. I don't think it's an either or.
That takes being pedantic to a whole new level.
Yeah.
That takes it to 11.
You know what I would much rather rally behind personally? I want to get rid of the letter C. The letter C letter C is either just a wannabe k sound or a wannabe s sound, or you put an H behind it and it becomes a ch. So make KH the ch. So cheese will be spelled KHEESE. There's no other reason for, there's no reason for C. C is just redundant. And here's the deal. Now here's the fun part. Try to sing the alphabet without C. A, B, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. I don't know. It gets really confusing after that.
Joe Sott.
That's why it's there. No, yeah.
See, and Captain Kurt's already upset that his name starts with a C. Guess what? You're going to a K, my friend. You're now Captain Kurt.
So that's
very Slavic, I think.
That's some I smoke too much weed logic. The letter H in Spanish we can do away with for sure. That one is completely useless.
It is.
So my video today was about crazy predictions that people made in the past about what the world would be like in the year 2020. And I got it from, I kind of stole it from an article, I'll admit it. But one of the other things that was in this particular article was that somebody predicted that the world, or that the English language would drop C, Q, and something else. There were 3 letters that it thought that wouldn't be part of the English language anymore.
Yeah, we can get rid of Q for sure, too.
I can't remember what the other one was. But
anyway. Huh.
Hmm.
That's awesome. So I'm not totally... Oh, probably
you're not
y.
The only person that's had that thought.
You can probably get rid of Y. I bet that's the other one.
It might have been that, yeah.
Because you can just do double E's for almost everything.
But it's less efficient, though. Takes more that is. Space on
that
the hard
is.
Drive.
That one's less efficient. Okay, so should we get to, I was sad that, like, literally we ended, the last time we recorded was, what, 2 weeks ago, and we talked about Starliner being a thing, but we didn't know what was going to happen by the time the episode dropped.
Yeah, I think it was going up the very next day. It was recorded.
Yep, it went up the morning after we re-recorded. Did you pay attention to the Starliner mission?
I did.
I saw you tweet some stuff, and I responded. I wasn't sure what was happening, but it sounded like there was something didn't go as planned, but it wasn't a total failure.
That's the best summary, honestly. The most like logical summary I've heard, because people lost their mind about it, saying, oh, NASA favorites, Boeing and all this stuff, they're saying it went pretty well. It's like, it did actually go, quite frankly, pretty well. So I'm going to give you guys the quick rundown. So as we talked about the last time we recorded, Boeing launched their Starliner spacecraft. And I was excited about this because this is obviously the other commercial crew provider. For the commercial crew, there's SpaceX's Dragon capsule, which flew for DM-1, the uncrewed flight test, last year. And then this was Boeing before the end of the year, just barely squeezing it out. December 20th, they got their flight test in. So this also was uncrewed. And this is, of course, a Starliner riding on top of the Atlas V rocket. And this is a unique Atlas V rocket. This is the Atlas V N22. So that means no fairing on top of it. As you can see in this still frame, it has two solid rocket boosters, one on each side, and it has two upper stage engines. So this is a really unique version of the Atlas V that has never flown before, which is kind of fun that it's going to be the one also powering or flying humans. Now, something that's going to be that's pretty fun about this is you'll notice that the solid rocket boosters burn for the first, minute and a half, 2 minutes or something. And then they did something really unique, and this caught me off guard. I did not know this was going to happen. The solid rocket boosters burnt out, and they held on to them.
They didn't.
And I've never really seen that. They didn't jettison them right away. And they even called it out. They're like, we're going to hold on to them for an additional, I forget if they say 80 seconds or 38 seconds, something like that. But you'll see here pretty soon that the solid rocket boosters will burn out, and they don't jettison them. And it was just really, really unique.
What was the reason for that?
So, here we go. Burnout of the solid rocket motor. So you'll see that the stuff will change quite a bit. Well, maybe not in that feed. But yeah, the solid rocket boosters burnt out. And the reason is they actually, because they're flying at such a shallow and different trajectory, normally the Atlas V will go kind of up pretty high and has a totally different trajectory. But because this is flying humans and because they need to make it so if they abort at any time, they would be able to survive reentry. They have to take this really shallow, unique profile. And that puts a lot, it stays in the denser parts of the atmosphere longer. It puts additional stresses on the solid rocket boosters. There's more aerodynamic pressure on them. So if they were to jettison them at the normal time, it might be too close to coming, like recontacting with the main booster. So there, now they finally jettison them. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So that was a fun thing, but that was nominal. That was supposed to happen. So that was already, as it happened, I was already quite shocked. And Comrade has in our Discord channel here, check this out. This is a profile. This is from flightclub.io. So a pretty normal Atlas V is the blue line, and the green line is the one that it flew. You can tell how much shallower. So, it stays whereas, a normal one will be at 100 kilometers within, it's 60 miles downrange. This is 150 miles downrange before it reaches 100 kilometers in altitude. Very, very different profile.
What do the dots mean on there?
Is that where they jettisoned things?
That might be. Yeah.
Just curious.
Stage separation, it sounds like, according to Comrade. Good questions. It seems like, so that's where the stage separates. So that shows just how much longer it stays in the shallow parts of the atmosphere, in the denser parts of the atmosphere. Pretty cool. So yeah, so for those of you listening, if you're just listening, sorry, basically you have two lines. One arc's a lot higher than the other, and the other one's a lot shallower. And those are the two different flight profiles. But anyway, everything was the Atlas V that the Starliner rode on top of, which is, of course, built by ULA, which is United Launch Alliance. Look at that. So that stage separation booster shut down, and then they lit up the dual RL-10 engine. And this was all we got for video after this point, basically, was that. And now people looking at screens.
Now we find out what happened, Tim. They weren't using Macs. They were using PCs.
Careful. Careful.
You just their triggered. Microphone settings weren't set up right.
That's right. Yep. They didn't have Tim there to troubleshoot the settings on the PC.
That's very insider baseball for those who are just listening.
Oh. But so the Atlas V performed absolutely perfectly, put them on a bullseye, quote-unquote bullseye insertion for the Starliner. But here's something interesting about the whole mission. They intentionally keep the entire vehicle when the rocket will let go of the actual spacecraft, it's still suborbital, actually. It puts it into like a 80 by 40, so 80 kilometers high at the highest point and 40 kilometers at the lowest point, something around there, which is really, really low. That's not a normal orbit. So in other words, if the Starliner doesn't do its insertion burn, it would have, boop, just like re-entered right away and come back down on the time around. So the Starliner itself actually does the orbital insertion. This is kind of similar to the space shuttle. I don't know if you guys remember, but the space shuttle, when it got into orbit, basically when it burnt out of the main fuel tanks, it let go, or main engines, it let go of the orange fuel tank. Then the orange fuel tank actually re-entered because it was technically barely suborbital, mm-hmm. but like just exactly suborbital. And then it used those little small motors on the back, the OMS, the orbital maneuvering system motors, and then it put itself into its final orbit. It's basically that exact same profile here for Starliner. Starliner does its own orbital insertion. And here's where things got interesting.
Dun, so, dun, dun.
So we're watching this live. You know, this is like 4 a.m. or something. And I think this is about where we see it. So notice on the left side of the screen, or there's three screens up in Mission Control. This is Johnson Space Center. This is actual NASA, you know, headquarters, or, you know, Johnson Space Center, I mean. And this is the actual Mission Control for the International Space Station. So they're sitting here watching it, and all of a sudden you start to see everyone kind of like getting up out of their seats and getting kind of confused. And the body, that was what I first noticed, was the body language started changing. And I started going like, uh-oh, is something not right? And here you can see all of a sudden the spacecraft is pointed like at totally the wrong way, and it's firing its engines kind of constantly. And all of a sudden they tell us, they're like, we are delaying orbital insertion, and which you can't really delay orbital insertion too much. You know, you kind of have a window of time. If you delay it by too much, you're just re-entering.
Right.
So this was an interesting thing for them to
orbital
to call out, basically.
Insertion as in getting into your orbit.
Yep, you just do a final like little poof of on the, in this case it would normally use its main has larger orbital maneuvering motors and put it, and just all it needs to do is accelerate I don't know, maybe a couple hundred meters per second and put itself into a final orbit, probably something like 300 meters per second or something, like a nice little small orbital insertion burn, and that's out of like 7,500 or something meters per second. So another 300 is a pretty small, you know, 100, 200, 300 would be a pretty small amount of acceleration, a small amount of delta V. So we start to see people kind of moving around in their chairs a little bit around here. I think this is about when that happened. This guy started standing at his desk, and that's when I realized, okay, something's not right. And he's starting to make phone calls and stuff. And
Houston?
Yeah. say it.
We have a problem.
There, look at that.
Yeah, that's a pretty clear gesture right there. Yeah. Guys, I don't know.
When your arms are up in the air, yeah, look at this is it right here. This is when I go, okay.
Didn't you do this on Kerbal? What's going on? I thought we already did this 50 times.
All right, get the camera guy out of here.
Yeah.
Turn off the cameras.
So that's when we realized, okay, you know, there's something going on. And they weren't really saying anything. And we don't have any footage of anything. So basically what ended up happening in the long run is kind of a, you know, most things, if something goes wrong, there's normally something else to fix it. So there's about three things here that kind of stacked on top of each other that made it so this particular test flight did not perform as planned. So they had to call off the actual rendezvous and docking with the International Space Station, which, of course, is kind of the primary thing they're trying to test out. They're trying to get it up to the space station, go to the space station, hang out for a full week, deorbit and re-enter and touch down in New Mexico. That was the original plan and the goal and all that stuff. So all of a sudden, at this point, they're starting to say, uh-oh, you know, we're seeing things go wrong. What happened there's an internal mission clock on Starliner. There's also an internal mission clock on the rocket. Somehow those two clocks got off. Hmm. And the Starliner clock was just at the wrong elapsed mission time.
So once
it let go of the rocket, it was onto the spacecraft to do its own thing. And all of a sudden, it thinks it's in a different time in the whole mission. I still don't know actually how much it was off, if it was like minutes or hours or what. So it was trying to hold itself and performing a maneuver really that it didn't need to do and wasn't supposed to do. And it was probably freaking out going like, wait, I'm supposed to be here, but I'm here. And it starts just kind of shooting its thrusters all over the place, holding this really precise attitude control, trying to like figure it out. And it did that at a time where apparently it was in an unalignment with the TDRS satellites, the data and relay satellites that allow Houston and ground control to be able to, you know, directly control the spacecraft. So it's doing this in a time, and because it changed orientation on them, they couldn't communicate with it to tell it to stop doing that. And this is, so it had a mission clock problem. The alignment of it threw it out of whack with the TDRS satellites. And then third problem is if people were on it, they would have been able to just go, oh, pfft, off.
Yeah, I heard one of the astronauts say that if they were on there, that would have actually not been a problem.
Yeah.
They said, what's going on? Oh, no, turn that off.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just like when your microphone's in auto volume and you need to just like override it.
And your normal camera doesn't work, so you have the potato cam.
Yeah. It's just like that, Ben. Do you know anything about any of this stuff?
Don't know what you're talking about. I only shoot in 8K raw, so you know.
That's raw, right?
One
what you're shooting
per minute.
Very raw.
So then it misses its orbit and comes back down, right?
No, they actually, about 4 or 5 minutes later, they're able to regain communication link with Starliner and luckily and regain control. Basically told it to stop freaking out, and they immediately got it into an orbit. And it was, I mean, realistically, when you're talking about orbits, there's only, when you go into orbit, you're on that inclination. Like, you're not going to change your orbit by that much. Mm-hmm. But so they basically just like got it into its orbit. The problem is it had already burned through so much of its propellant, it was not safe to proceed trying to dock with the International Space Station.
Right.
Gotcha.
So by the time they had a handle on everything, they basically realized we don't have the safe margins to go up and dock with the International Space Station. And that's, you know, realistically, it probably could have, you know, but everything, there's a huge safety margin, especially when you're talking about sending a huge, you know, a multi-ton spacecraft that's
could be hurtling towards
with, you know, with six humans on board. You just, the safety protocols and the stuff is, you wouldn't believe it. So basically, yeah, they had to call off the rendezvous and docking with the International Space Station, which was a shame, but it did still allow them to be able to test virtually everything else. They even deployed the docking port in space to make sure everything worked on that end. They were able to use the radar systems and the star trackers and all the thrusters, fire them all up, make sure everything performed as normal. And then instead of it being a week-long mission, they ended up re-entering 2 days later. And they ended up coming in for an absolutely, honestly, like a picture-perfect bullseye landing in New Mexico. And it's actually the first time an orbital capsule like this landed on land in the United States, because that's how Soyuz does it. Right. But the United States has always splashed down with their capsules with people. So, yeah.
Hmm.
So a successful failure.
It really perfectly successful failure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what'd you guys think? Did you guys hear about this? And did you hear people going nuts and all that stuff?
I heard a little bit of that. I don't Twitter too much, so I was a little bit insulated from it. But you know, I heard that it didn't quite go to plan, and I didn't know exactly why. So this was educational for me. That's why I hang out with you.
I didn't know what it was supposed to do, I guess, from the beginning. Like, it didn't. When I saw, I think your tweet or someone else's tweet that it didn't go as planned, I just assumed the whole thing like exploded or something. Like, I didn't, you know what I mean? I just assumed, oh, complete loss. And then it was like, oh, no, it's still doing stuff. So, yeah, it was. Now, when was this? The 20th, you said, or something? 19th?
The 20th.
So, yeah. So in terms of Boeing stuff, because this was a Boeing capsule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you have this, you have the 737 MAX failure.
Fiasco.
And then on Christmas Eve, the CEO gets fired.
Yeah. And don't forget the SLS program, the rocket that has cost so far $16 million and done nothing and been years behind.
Billion.
You mean? Is also Boeing.
Do you mean?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
$16 billion, yeah.
No, wait, you're not talking about when the tank ruptured.
No.
Yeah, that was supposed to happen.
Just in general. Yeah, so it was kind of the perfect storm for the CEO to kind of get canned. Yeah. Plus, we kind of made fun of him on the show. So I'm just saying, any CEOs out there, you better watch out because, you know, I'm looking at you, Jeff Bezos. You know.
The power we hold.
Obviously, hugely influential here, so look out. People.
That's right. It's funny. I did a video where I made fun of the Mercedes CEO, and then a week later he stepped down.
See, we got to be careful with these powers.
Causation. I'm just saying it happened.
But the important thing to remember here, people just want to be jerks, you know. And I don't believe that there's any favoritism. In NASA. I don't know. You know, people are quick to be like, well, of course, you know, if this happened to SpaceX, that NASA would have made that. There are times where I think that there are definitely things where it seems like SpaceX doesn't get the favor, like the, what's that called? The something of doubt, the benefit of the doubt, you know, where it does feel like Boeing does. So I'll agree with that. Like there are times where I'm like, okay, come on, you know, but in general, I really think that NASA's not going to be skimping on this, and if they go through all the checklist things that was required, and if they think it's safe for humans, because again, if a human wrote on this, it would have been perfectly fine, and it probably would have been a successful mission.
Even if it went exactly as it did, they would have still survived, which has
been
the point,
perfectly
right?
Fine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, if are we to say that we're so, because people are on one hand, they're always saying like, why is NASA being so risk averse? Like, just get people on there. You know, we're years behind in the commercial crew program. Just get them on there. And then something like this happens where they would have been perfectly safe. Astronaut and crew safety was still first and foremost. And then people are still like, oh, see, I'll bet you NASA's going to give them a pass and all this stuff. Like, no,
NASA's going to do the thing I've been saying that they need to do.
Exactly. Oh, but it's because it was Boeing.
About time. You know,
it's just people, like, I want people just to, like, remember that. It's not always, I don't know, it doesn't always go as planned, but, I'm going to give NASA the benefit of the doubt of doing what's best for their astronauts and for the safety of the crew on board and all that stuff. So,
yeah. Is it a fair thing to say, and this is coming from a SpaceX fanboy, that maybe, I mean, look, NASA's been working with SpaceX for what, 10 years? And they've been working with Boeing for like 60 years.
Right.
So maybe Boeing's kind of earned their trust over the years enough to where maybe they do get a little bit lighter treatment than SpaceX does. Is that a fair thing to say? I'm just putting it out there.
I definitely think that would be the reason they would get, if there is some
if
kind
there,
of favoritism.
If there is, yeah.
It's because of that legacy and that heritage. Yeah.
Right.
SpaceX is the work wife. And Boeing is the woman you've been married to for 50 years, right? It's a different relationship that you have.
Way to make it scandalous.
Yeah, come on.
That's what we do out here in California.
But basically, the landing was perfect. The cool thing is they're reusing the spacecraft. So they'll actually be refurbishing it and using it for their second crewed version or crewed flight. So that's exciting because it comes back. Yeah, let me see if I can find some footage, because it comes back, honestly, in great shape.
The second crewed flight, meaning there will be a different one that's used for the first crewed flight?
Correct. Okay. There'll be a brand new spacecraft that comes in here. Let me share this with you. A brand new spacecraft will be the first crewed flight, which is CFT, which will be the crewed flight test. So here you can see that's the vehicle after it re-entered in the desert. Splashes down in the desert. And then this is NASA crew personnel going out and beginning to secure it and everything. Now, this thing just splashed, or not splashed on, touchdown, and it has these big airbags that it lands onto to make it extra absorbent and smooth and soft landing for the crew on board. The Soyuz capsule, when it lands like this, it has little propulsive thrusters that it fires literally at the last, like, the last second. It just goes, just to bleed off a little bit of that extra velocity.
That's what New Shepard does.
Yep, exactly. New Shepard does that same type of thing. But Boeing opted for these large airbags, which also make it, I think, a little bit better for a splashdown.
Dust down?
Or if it had to do a splashdown. Like, if it had to do a...
Dirt down?
When it does a touchdown, it's great, but also it helps with if it had to do an abort splashdown.
Those parachutes look like Captain America's shield.
They do, literally. Here you can see it deploying its heat shield.
Oh, the heat shield, yeah.
Yeah, and inflating those airbags. So this is cool. It's cool that they'll be reusing this. You know, I think that's always fun to see. And it's supposed to be able to be reused about 10 times. But nice. Yeah, I just thought that was probably the biggest. But look at how, let's see if we can find footage of when it's actually, like, done. Because it really came back looking clean. Look at this. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Are they going to leave that there for Burning Man? Or?
They'll set it on fire.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. That'd be the coolest Burning Man. I'd go to that. But yeah, I mean, again, say what you will. I'm just excited that this flew. I hope that this means, we'll talk about this later, but I hope that means we'll finally see people flying in 2020.
So quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so SpaceX docked the Dragon crew Dragon,
mm-hmm.
and then they did the abort test, right?
Well, they're trying to do the abort test. They haven't done that in-flight abort test yet, but they did their first, like, the pad abort. They did that in, like, 2015.
Right. So I'm just trying to get the cadence down here, or the sequence. So does that mean that Boeing still needs to do an abort test for Starliner?
Boeing only did a pad abort, and they just did that pretty recently. That was like November, I think, or October. Pretty recently they did their pad abort. That was the one where one of the parachutes didn't come out. So yeah. Remember, again, Boeing had a pretty rough year in that sense where just things did not look pretty. And so did SpaceX, because SpaceX lost that Dragon capsule and blew up, you know, a Starship prototype and lost two Falcon Heavy center cores. Like, yeah, it was a year of hardware loss for everybody.
But given the number, like, you need to have a ratio there, because how many launches did SpaceX have comparatively?
Right.
Like 100 or something? I don't know. Like
a lot of events, yeah.
Yeah, but a lot. Far more than Boeing did, right? But that's not the point. I think I like your sentiment. The point is like, we all should be in this together, so to speak, really, because that's the beauty of this. And I'm sure there's intense competition, and it's business, and there's money at stake. But I think as a consumer of this, and not somebody that is your livelihood, you know, I think we all should just be rooting for everyone, really, because like the thing, it's so grand. The result here of sending people off this planet, it's like, it doesn't matter who does it. It's special, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all should be for this. It shouldn't be like Boeing sucks, SpaceX, woo, right. Or, you know, vice versa.
Right. I mean, it's the horse race is fun. You know, it's kind of hard to not get wrapped up in it, and that's fine. And if you want SpaceX to win, great, but don't wish ill on the other side, you know, just because of that. Here's what I think they should do in the spirit of unity. Is launch both of the crewed versions at the same time, dock in space, do a little zero gravity dance with all the astronauts, maybe even switch out, show each other, hey, here's the button in the Starliner, oh, here's the screen in the Dragon, and then we can all be like, oh,
it's
kumbaya,
voice control.
And yeah,
it's just listening to you all the time.
It'll be ooh, I like this transition, but it will be like the Apollo Soyuz mission, only the commercial crew, let's love first mission. I don't know. Oh, speaking of voice command. Oh, sorry. Actually, we're not going to transition yet. Joe, to answer your question, because we did have a little tangent there. Basically, the milestones we're looking for now, SpaceX has to perform an in-flight abort test, which is currently scheduled for about a week from now almost, or the 11th, I think, January 11th. I will be attending that. That's one that I have to see, because there's a good chance we'll see a booster explode. And, I mean, how
good. That's always fun.
Go see that. Yeah. So I'm going down for that one. And then if that goes well, then SpaceX, Elon said on Twitter that the Dragon, the Crew Dragon, it will be shipping in February. It needs to have some checks. And he actually said, I think a few months. So best, we're looking at like May, June
for
the flight test. And then Boeing, at this point, I have no idea. They don't actually have anything after this. It's up to NASA. If NASA says that they're good to go for the crew flight test, it'd be a matter of, I think Boeing still needs to do some things internally. I've heard that they've been kind of, that they didn't have the abort system armed on this flight. The uncrewed test, they didn't actually have it like armed or ready. And it sounds like they're still kind of trying to like finish certification on that whole system. Even though they've done their pad abort, it still sounds like they're just trying to like finish up certification on some of that stuff. So we might be waiting on that. So it's still totally anyone's race at this point, which is interesting.
That makes it fun.
Yeah, it does. It does. Speaking of voice command.
Yeah, we can go there. So Tesla released a holiday update. You guys both got it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just before I did a whole lot of driving, so I got to kind of check it out a little bit.
Yeah, okay. So let's just run through the new features in this 10.2, they're calling it, kind of unofficially. There's a different number that is the actual software version. But this comes to us just before Christmas, and it includes some fun stuff. So let me do a little screen share, and because I did a video on this. Basically, it's a big voice command update. You can now do a lot of the climate control stuff from voice command, which I think is super helpful because that is, with the screen, it's not always intuitive where you need to click and stuff, so you have to take your eyes off the road. It also has text message support, which is a pretty cool thing. So you can text people. It'll read back your text messages.
We should point out, look at how naturally you're talking to it. People might not be seeing this, but you're showing a video of you just saying things like, make it warmer in here.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, keep going. I just think that's so cool.
Right. Well, I think that's kind of the point. There was a lot of things in this update that were centered around a new voice command engine. And it's something I've been kind of moaning about for a long time because it's like, this is such an advanced piece of machinery, and this thing is literally just... like kindergartner made this software. It was terrible. Given how advanced natural language processing, I mean, like, this is an area that is very developed and mature at this point. Probably everyone listening to this has a device that is listening to them, waiting for their commands, or has one in their house that's doing it, whatever. We all have. So this isn't something new, right? That's why I'm always like, how are you so advanced on one thing and so far behind in the other? But some of the other things that it can do is it can actually control some of the features in the car. This is one I'm showing on the screen here. Maybe I'll make it a little bit bigger so you can see that. Where I was driving, and you know what happens when you do navigation is it'll zoom in, or it'll try to zoom to the appropriate level based on what you're doing. But you can control that as well. So here I had a map. I was navigating to the office, and I thought it was too... zoomed in, so I told it to zoom out, and it literally pulls back in the navigation while driving. And then, of course, the opposite also works, where you can say zoom in. I couldn't get it to zoom all the way out. I feel like that would have been cool if I could say, like, show top-level view or something, you know what I mean? Like the bird's eye view, not the, like, active driving view or whatever it might be called. But yeah, like this whole update, or the majority of it, was focused around this. And these are some commands I didn't like yet, was that it doesn't let you open the trunk or the frunk. I think it should be able to do that. I don't know why it wouldn't be able to. Some people pointed out that, oh, well, if you're driving, that seems like a dumb idea. Well, first off, you don't know my life. But I agree.
But that can be something they could enable with Park.
Yeah. I mean, you could have controls around that, kind of guardrails around it. But also, you could have, imagine if the car was listening and you could just say, hey, Tesla, or hey, Elon, or give it a name or whatever, and it did that thing. That would be nice because you're like, you know, hey, Tesla, open the trunk. While you're like getting your kids out of the back seat and you need to open the trunk in a second anyways. You know what I mean? I think there's use cases for it. So that way you don't have to like pull something out of your pocket or whatever. Along these lines also was the text message support. I think I have a video here with Tim Dodd messaging me.
Weird. Who's that guy?
And it reads it back, and then you hit a button, and it, you know, you can respond to it, et cetera, et cetera. This is pretty cool. Have you guys tried this feature yet?
I did last night, and it did not work.
All right.
Same. I've tried the text messages, the thing that just has not worked for me yet.
Yeah. So I don't know. Now, I did notice that there was some delay. Like, when I was testing it at for the video, it all worked fine. And then the next day when I was driving, I would hit the button, and I would start talking immediately, and it wouldn't pick it up. But then if I hit the button and waited half a second, one full second, and then talked, it would work. So I've seen a lot of people complain about, oh, voice commands don't work. And then there's a new update coming out, 2019.40.50.6 or something, that fixes that. So I think that it was an early major release, even though maybe not, it doesn't seem like that, that is going to be, you know, get better over time. So it was weird. When I sat there and tested it, 100%, no issues. Start driving the next day testing it, it had some issues. So going the wrong direction. But I think it's getting overall much better.
Yeah, so last night I was out with a friend, and I was on the way back home, and I tried to text my wife, and I thought, hey, let's try this thing. And it just kind of got stuck. I was like just trying to like send text to my wife. And yeah, it kind of got stuck. And then I eventually had to get my phone and do it through my phone. And after I did that, it cleared up again. But it almost kind of locked everything up. Like I couldn't even get the radio to play for a second there until I messed with my phone and was able to fix it like that.
Did you try clicking it again?
I clicked buttons. I tried to swipe it off the screen. I tried several things. I had to do it through my phone, basically, is what I'm saying.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been a phone
thing. I kind of had a similar thing where it like froze with the dictation, and it just like wouldn't do anything then. Like I had the dictation and it nailed that, but then it just like stuck there. And I'm like,
You know you have to click again to send it, right?
Well, it said tap again, and I was tapping on it. Mm-hmm. And then there was a little like... The little refresh. Circular arrow thing. Like
yeah,
the
which
refresh.
Is like not an icon that makes sense. Right.
Yeah. So I was hitting that, and it and it kind of redid everything, kind of what I was expecting that symbol to do.
Huh.
And then, anyway, it was a fail.
Same. I couldn't get it to actually send.
See, I think this is where I've, you know, again, confirmation bias, our perspectives, we're all different, right? The scroll wheels and the buttons part of it on the Model S and X I find much easier. The Model 3, I think, is much harder and kind of more protruded or whatever. But that was something that was kind of annoying about it, is that the number of times you have to click that thing to get it to work. Because it's like, it'll pop up. I disabled the chime because that's immediately was annoying. And then I clicked. So a message will pop up. You have to click. It'll play the message. You have to click to reply. You do the reply. Then you have to click to send it. So it's like, you know, three or four clicks every single message. So that can just be a lot. I think that considering, I think, how that button feels. I don't think the button is the best for having to click it, you know, a gazillion times while you're driving. But, you know, I think there's definitely some quirks. And hopefully the next update, which has already been rolled out to a lot of people. I haven't got it yet. But hopefully the next one will fix any of those little bugs and all that. So.
I want to say that the two that blew my mind for voice recognition, because like normally for voice recognition, sure, it does a few things and whatever, but I was just like, what else can I do? And I just said, not like, do I want to turn on, you can turn on all the seat heaters, you know, you can say turn on the passenger seat heat, blah, blah. I just said, open the seat heater controls, and it actually knew to open up the window. And for some reason that kind of blew my mind, because that's something that sometimes you just want to see.
Yeah.
You know, like that type of stuff, and the intuitiveness of it is like, show me the seat heaters, and just did it. And then I said, close the seat heaters, and it did it.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing. And then what was the other thing? I talked about two things on Twitter, actually, and they both just kind of were like, okay, now this is useful. Like now
it can,
I actually care about
it
voice
can
command.
It can open up any settings page.
That's so cool.
It can't adjust settings besides kind of climate controls, I don't believe. Like you can't say turn Sentry mode on or something like that. I don't think that works. But you can say open security page and it'll show it.
Right. The other one that it blew my mind is you can adjust the fans, where the fans are pointing.
Oh, cool. I didn't try that.
So I said, like, point the fans down, and it moved them down.
Wow.
Like, that's amazing. That's... That's pretty out there. So I was just shocked at what all it could do.
Yeah. In my testing, I did a bunch of seat heater ones. So it was like set seat heater to low, set, you know, seat heater to high, turn seat heater off, turn rear passenger seat heater on. Like, it was very, very fine tuned what you can do. Yeah. So
pretty cool though.
Other bits in this update. One that I actually am pretty excited about that maybe flew under the radar for a lot of people is camp mode. And some of you guys might be confused as to what camp mode is. So now you have on, off, dog, and camp mode. Camp mode is like on, where it'll keep the climate controls on, you know, until it hits 20% battery. But camp mode also keeps the lights on and the sound, like music on, and basically everything. The car is just like running. You know, everything is full bore while you're in camp mode. So if you were, you know, I don't know, at the beach or out in a campsite or something, you want to like Elon also called this, I think I have the tweet coming up here in the video. He called it party mode, where your car is like the entertainment there. Yeah, party and camper mode. That was back in July of 2018 when he said that. So
yeah,
you know, Elon time.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's a lot easier for a car to sit there and run heat or air and some music and a little bit of lights compared to driving down the interstate. You know, like the amount of power it consumes is you know, when I was out in Boca Chica sometimes and it'd be, you know, 90 degrees or something. I'm sitting there running the air for hours, and because it had that 4-hour time limit before, sometimes I'd have to like get up and, you know, touch the screen and do stuff. But I think it only drained the battery, even though I had it absolutely like minimum heat or maximum air conditioning. I mean, I think it only drained about like 6 or 7% an hour, which is pretty great considering how much stuff I was running off it and in the sun and everything.
It's crazy the amount of energy that the cars have. Now, AC air conditioning is one of the things that uses the most energy. But yeah, like if you think about it, let's say there's what is it, like 78 or 80 kilowatt hours, depending on your model, that are in there. That, you know, an average home, that would power it for 78 to 80 hours. That's a tremendous amount of like powering your house with your home air conditioning running and things like that. Like, it's a tremendous amount of energy. That's why that whole Tesla gas can video I did, as great, like, I don't think you could engineer much of a better solution than that. The fact is, there just is not a way to tote around enough energy in that form, you know, to refill the car, because the car is just such an absolute beast when it comes to its energy.
Yep.
So some other updates, just to wrap it up, were Twitch they added for streaming, which is pretty cool. If you guys like Twitch, I'm not super into it, but I know a lot of people are. And also this game Stardew Valley, which I thought was interesting. Now, have you guys ever heard of that?
I never heard of it.
Actually.
And did you try it, or did you pull it up in your car at all?
Yeah, I did.
And were you able to play
with
it?
My nephews. What was that?
Were you able to actually play it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I played it with my nephews for a little bit.
Now,
I'd
never heard of it. My buddy Ryan McCaffrey, who you guys may know as the host of Ride the Lightning podcast, is also like a 20-year veteran of video game reviewer for IGN. So he's like, you know, Mr. Like when he interviewed Elon, and when he talked about Cuphead, he's like, oh, I know those guys. You know, and like, he's that guy. He had never heard of it. I'm like, what? Like, how are you? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, after the Tesla thing, he started researching. He said, I think it only has one developer, like one guy made the entire thing, is the only person working on it. And it's got like its own cult following and stuff. And as it played in my car, I was drawn in. Like the storyline, the music, the kind of nostalgic, cute, 8-bit graph. Like, I was really drawn in.
Yeah, nostalgia factor is high.
I don't even know what the game is about. It's like a farm or something, and I don't know. But just the storytelling, like, it was so well done. I was like, impressed by it, for sure.
Yeah. I finally opened up Cuphead and played that with my nephews. That was... that is so hard.
Now, you need a controller, right?
Yeah, I've got two controllers. That's pretty fun. They loved it. I love, it's fun to watch them, like, because they don't play video games. My nephews are like, Their idea of fun is hanging around in a ninja gym all day long. So they don't like have, they've like never played video games almost. So it's just fun watching them like learn, especially on a game that hard, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we sat and played it for a good hour or two, and that was pretty fun.
So but. Either my car sucks or I suck, because every time there's a new, like we were just talking about the voice command, the text thing. I was like, no, I couldn't make it work. The first time I tried to do the smart summon, it hit a curb. I tried to play Stardew Valley, and it did that opening thing where the old guy is like giving his farm to his son or whatever, and then it went to like a blue screen and nothing would happen after that.
Oh, so I think you have to click it. Did you try tapping it?
Well, yeah, I tapped. There was only one thing up there, and I hit it, and nothing happened, yeah. And it was just like. So I finally just had to close out and be like, I guess I'll try this
later. Were you on Wi-Fi?
Okay, the Wi-Fi in my garage kind of sucks. So that maybe that was it.
So the guys at Tesla told me when they told me about the release that the entire game is available for play, which they made a big deal of. Like, it must be some massive, you know, amount of footage and stuff that it needs. So I don't know.
So you think it might have just been a Wi-Fi issue?
Yeah, like maybe give it another go, in there or something like that. So.
I'll drive it into my house.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll...
So thanks, Tesla, for the holiday update. Hope everyone else got it. And
can I ask something real quick though? Sorry, before we wrap it up. So we got the update, and then I did a whole lot of Christmas driving, going and seeing family and stuff. So something I noticed while I was on the highway using autopilot was that it didn't stay 100% right in the middle of the lane anymore. Mm-hmm. It seemed to kind of oscillate a little bit.
Yeah, ping pong.
That's been a complaint.
Yeah, have y'all noticed this?
Yeah, I noticed it too.
Okay.
I haven't, but I don't drive the Model 3, so.
Yeah, that's been a complaint for this update, and it sounds like it already got addressed, I think, with the newest software update.
Okay. So, well, something that I thought maybe I noticed, maybe, you know, might have just been in my head or something, but it seemed like, because whenever, all right, whenever I'm driving and I go past somebody in the lane next to me, I tend to sort of get over in the lane just a little bit because I want a little space there. And it's always made me a little bit nervous on autopilot because it totally does not do that.
It does the opposite.
It almost does the opposite. And I'm just like, eh. But I felt like maybe it was doing a little bit of that this time. Like it was getting over in the lane a little as it was passing people.
I think it is.
Okay.
I've also heard people saying that. And I noticed it too when I passed a semi. It really felt like it was hugging the opposite side of the lane more, which I was a lot more comfortable with.
So maybe that was me kind of giving them a pass a little bit. It's like, okay, well, maybe that's what they're working on now.
Yeah,
there was a thing a while back, I don't know if it's still a thing depending on what version you're on, but where it would kind of lock into the car in front of you, and if they kind of swerved over, you would kind of swerve over. Yeah, and I remember thinking that is terrifying. but I've had that happen before where it seems like, I'm like, why is it doing this? And I look, because in the visualization, if it's locked in on one of the cars, that car is a different color than the other ones. And that's usually what it uses for detecting the follow distance.
Right.
So you can kind of just tell by looking at the visualization exactly what's happening. And in fact, this is why when someone cuts in, it will change the different colored car, the highlighted car, we'll call it, that it's following to that new one. But if it doesn't do it quick enough, then like you're going to hit that guy, right? Because it doesn't, it sees it, but it doesn't recognize that, oh, I need to back up yet. There's actually a YouTube channel that I don't remember what it's called, but all they've done are the exact same angle of videos.
Yes.
And it's like a dude driving to work. I think he's even in San Diego or Southern California. And he just talks about what's happening. And that was where I picked up on that. I'm like, oh, like it is actually kind of telling you exactly what's happening. And so I've noticed that before where it like swerved over. And the reason I could tell from the visualization was it seemed to be locked in on a guy that was doing the same thing, which is like I don't know. It's like bizarre, scary. I don't know what to think of that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. No, that's I definitely noticed that. It seems to do the ping pongy thing. I wouldn't be surprised if this is like, you know, Tesla working on some things, or even like, what if, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just excited to see that it definitely seems to have made some progress. But sometimes you go, you know, two steps forward and one step back a little bit. But
So just before the.
I can't wait. We don't have the visualizations, any of us, because none of us have
hardware 3.
version 3 hardware. I can't wait for that. That's starting to Have you seen the stuff that is showing now?
Yeah, Tesla
stop
Raj.
Light, stop signs.
Tesla Raj everything. Had a video where he got a Hardware 3 car and was doing that. It's almost
even
too
now,
much.
Like,
when I was looking at it, I'm like, this is really busy now looking at it.
But I guess it's confirmation for now. Maybe just for now they're showing you like what it can do, and eventually they'll, you know, not have to show you everything. But it's even showing like handicapped parking spots and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh. And HOV lane signs and cones and the poles, and like, it's nuts. So that's really cool that it's actually visualizing that, recognizing it, labeling it, rendering it in 3D time. It's pretty amazing, actually. Oh. So
I'm sure it's had it forever, but now they have a high enough degree of confidence to show it to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I've ridden in some of those self-driving cars with the engineering cars, and the stuff that it's seeing is like, you can't even comprehend what's going on. And in fact, there's that guy, I forget his name, his Twitter handle is like Green or something. Have you seen him? That does, I don't know how he has like root level access basically to a car. It just, it's amazing what he's able to pull together. So he's an interesting guy to follow on Twitter for.
Well, he hacks it. Didn't he like hack it to be able to show like the root level everything?
I think he just like has the password or something. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean.
1, 2, 3, yeah. 4.
If it's, yeah. This episode sponsored.
Password.
No. Yeah, so Tesla delivering us all some goodies, you know, via software updates by the end of the year. And also delivering some cars in China before the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool update as well. I don't know if you guys have followed along that, but Tesla, the Gigafactory 3 in China, which are making Model 3s and other cars for China, they're actually being delivered. So this comes from Tasmanian. and Vincent on Twitter, who follows all the China news real closely. It looks like 15 employees received their Model 3s, which were made in the Shanghai Gigafactory, which, by the way, only broke ground in, I think, February of 2019. So it went legit from, like, just dirt lot to here's people getting their cars. And reportedly, they've made a ton more, and they are basically in route. So the rate, I think it's close to 1,000 a week, they said. I don't think Tesla's confirmed any of that, but because of you know, how big China is, shipping things around takes a little bit of time, and so they are looking to start delivering those officially on January 7th in a few days, and so here it comes. Tesla is making Model 3s in China for the Chinese market, which is really saves a ton on import tariffs. And also, is it increases shipping time, and China is still by far the world's largest EV market. So this is all really good stuff for Tesla in China.
Well, that's crazy.
And not only that, it just increases right now they're so limited on how many cars can come out of Fremont. By having another point of production now, it just can, you know, increase their production by, you know, a lot.
Yep.
Is the China Gigafactory capable of actually producing more than Fremont? I mean, is it bigger?
Yes. I think they said that the stated output would reach around 500,000 per year, which is close to what I think Fremont is close to that. Fremont obviously hasn't produced that many yet in a year, but given, I mean, we can just hop into these numbers if you guys want, because I kind of crunched all this already.
Crunch.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at next year Tesla producing around 250,000 cars from their China factory alone. I got that number by going outside and measuring the wind and just pulling it out of there. No, I actually used some maths, which I'm not the greatest at, but I know how to tell the computer to give me the maths. And so I used this thing called an S-log growth curve, which is nothing to do with the – or actually it does have to do with the camera profile, but not exactly. So this is the same growth curve that – Elon and everyone has stated basically how their production ramps work for the factories. So there's some math here. That basically what you do is you punch in a couple different points of either known or expected production numbers. So if we now know that they're producing 1,000 a week today, and then we'll say within 3 months, let's say Tesla says they'll be producing 5,000 a week, whatever, you punch those numbers in, there's an algorithm that basically runs, and bam, you know, here's your production ramp. Oh, and you need to know your peak output. So looking at 10,000 a week as their peak output, again, I think that they said that it'll be higher than that, but let's be a little conservative here. So then if you basically do this math and you add all those up, this chart here is what you see. So we're, you know, starting out very small in January, going all the way up to a total of just over 250,000, almost 254,000 is what I have them at just from China next year. So
wow,
that's a lot. if you add that, whoops, I need to go authenticate my browser again.
Classic.
Yeah, well, you know, demo. If you add that to what I predict Fremont will do, you're looking at around 650,000 cars I'm predicting for Tesla to these are deliveries, so it's a bit slightly behind production, but 650,000 is right around where I think they'll be next year. We don't have Q4 numbers yet. They should be coming out next week. I, to come up with that number, assumed 99,000 deliveries for Q4 of 2019. We'll see. It'll be in that ballpark, maybe, you know, 4 or 5,000 plus or minus. So that would give them 354,000 for 2019, 650,000 for 2020. Then guess why we jumped over a million in 2021?
Because Model Y.
Well, Model Y will increase production. That'll also, that's already included in the
That's 2020.
In 2020. But it's, I don't expect Model Y to really start like actual volume production until the second half of next year.
Right.
So you know, there'll be a few there, but I don't think I have any. I basically have zero up until Q3 of next year. But yeah, so that'll increase it, but that's not like, that's not going to like double it, right?
Gigafactory 4?
That's right. So the German Gigafactory will hopefully be coming online. I mean, who knows? Because China obviously is kind of the world's manufacturing hub. I don't think that's, I think that's fairly objective to say that. Germany, in terms of autos, tremendous. Obviously, talent and heritage and legacy there. But the factory, I believe, is near Berlin, which is not where most of the auto stuff is. Most of the auto stuff, if I understand, is far south of that. But anyways, if they can get through that, then I'm expecting them to start ramping things up in Germany, meaning that in 2021, that year alone, currently I have them at over a million cars delivered. And then 2022, that factory would essentially be fully ramped up. And you're looking at, I don't know, 1.5. By then, we'll probably have some more gigafactories announced, I'm guessing. Maybe another one in North America, maybe another one in Asia somewhere, but yeah.
And real quick, remind me, just before we move on, like, what's a big car company produce per year? Like, what's GM, you know, what's Ford?
Yeah, so I think last year...
Still pretty small compared to them.
Yeah, I think last year Ford in the U.S. alone, and this might only... Yeah, I think they sold / delivered like 3 million cars.
I real quick Googled Ford sold 5.9 million vehicles in 2018.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I must be thinking trucks only. Is because
that could be. Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm still coming out of Cybertruck research phase. Yeah, right. and that's just U.S. right? Worldwide, it's probably not double that, but a lot. This is where it's kind of funny. So Porsche is a really interesting company, and they only deliver, I think, like 300,000 cars worldwide per year. And you're like, oh. So the whole like Tesla killer thing, you're like, it's stupid. They don't even make that many cars. Like Tesla's like volumes ahead of them already. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Yeah.
They're more bespoke than that even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but then I think Toyota is maybe like 20 million a year worldwide, and Honda, Volkswagen. Well, and Volkswagen would be the next one, but that's Volkswagen Group, which is like 50
everything.
Companies. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know.
That's crazy.
It's a lot. So Tesla is still very much a small automaker. Even 5 years from now, in terms of number of vehicles, they will be relatively small, I would say, compared to Toyota or somebody like that. But, you know, things are cruising along and, you know, tons and tons of growth. So, yeah, all good things looking for 2020 and beyond.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so before we move on to the next thing, I think this is a good point to transition here. This is our first sponsored video. We actually have a sponsor for this one. So let's jump into that real quick, pay some bills, and we'll be right back. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting our ludicrous future. Hey, it's a new year, and many of you out there, like most people, have some kinds of resolutions or goals for 2020, and if you do have something like that, Skillshare is a great place to start. Skillshare is an online learning platform where you can learn pretty much any freaking thing on the planet. Seriously, if you're curious about it, there's an expert out there who's created an entire course around it on Skillshare. And all you have to do is just sit there in your pajamas and soak it all in. From dog grooming to cooking to business, design, and more. One good place to start might be the Productivity Masterclass by Thomas Frank. Thomas is a YouTuber and productivity expert, and he's developed this class to help you be more organized and make better use of your time. After all, time is the most precious commodity we have, even more precious than Ben's biceps. You can give Skillshare a try for free for 2 months if you sign up at skillshare.com/OLF. You'll get unlimited access to thousands of classes, and after the free trial, it's only $10 a month for a yearly subscription. Right now, millions of people are learning and growing on Skillshare, so don't get left behind. Go to skillshare.com/OLF. We'll put the link down in the description below. Go check it out. So getting back into things, Tim, didn't Elon have some news about Starship that sounds pretty interesting?
You know, he went off on a little December 30th, basically, was the meat of it. A nice big old Twitter. He was down hanging out in Boca Chica helping them, you know, rally before the end of the year, working on bulkheads. And these are the, you know, the dome structures that kind of seal up the tanks of Starship. You know, again, these are 9 meters wide. They're really big pieces of tank. And so they're out there producing multiple of them. That he said now that they're working on three already, so almost three done. Each vehicle will have, you know, if you think about it, each vehicle has three anyway. You have the one, you know, you have a top and bottom and then a common one in between the two tanks. So I'll always have a tank of liquid methane and liquid oxygen, and so liquid methane will have a bottom, liquid oxygen will have a top a dome, and then there's a common bulkhead in between the two. So most likely Starship only have three bulkheads, and these are the three that we're seeing. And I asked him, is there any substantial difference in welding and manufacturing techniques between these bulkheads and the Mark 1, 2? And I also laughed because he said Starship has giant dome. and so he said almost everything is different. These parts are stamped versus manually bumped form and tip TIG welded versus flux core. So higher precision, stronger joints, and 20% mass reduction. So we're already seeing a pretty big change in the way they're manufacturing this stuff. And again, you know, they're still doing these prototypes out in the open. And we'll get into that. So then he said, best would be an autogenous laser weld, but we need more precise parts and fixtures. Hopefully get that done in 2020. So I said, speaking of autogenous, which is, we'll talk about that in a second. When will we see autogenous pressurization on Starship? I assume the first couple will still utilize helium COPVs like Starhopper. And so what this is talking about is as you drain fuel, you need to fill up the tank with to maintain pressure, right? So if you run, you know, if you drain liquid methane, normally they backfill tanks. Traditionally, they've backfilled tanks with helium. And that's what those little COPVs, those black little bottles, those composite overwrap pressure vessels, they're filled really, you know, because helium's, you can squeeze it like crazy, get up to thousands of PSI. And then they can just slowly fill that pressure. And it, because it's so, so undense or whatever, it can fill that gap and it's inert. So it doesn't like explode or anything like that. So that's how things have been done. Like, but the space shuttle had, autogenous pressurization, which is where they tapped off a little bit of pressure from the engines and fed it back into the tanks. And that's actually what they're going to be doing here. So Elon said, no, it will be autogenous from the start, tapping hot CH4, so methane and oxygen from Raptor. So again, they're already going to be going right away with this first Starship prototype, having autogenous pressurization, which is pretty cool. That's, I think in general, it actually removes some complexity because you don't have to worry about those helium bottles, but it is still kind of a whole different beast you're tackling. But I think that's a good thing. They all have a lot less. So I go, whoa, I just realized, will there be any COPVs on Starship once you move on from cold gas thrusters? Because Starhop read those cold gas thrusters. Again, we saw all those like white COPVs on the top. Mm-hmm. Those were nitrogen, filled with nitrogen. Those powered those little cold gas thrusters. And originally, Elon was saying that the first couple Starships will still utilize cold gas, even though it's not the most efficient, that they'd go to a bipropellant reaction control system. And I said, is there helium spin start for Raptor, or is that bootstrap? So what I'm saying, sorry, this is like just translating nerd talk, but currently, if they went to having not having cold gas thrusters and having autogenous pressurization, that would almost eliminate the need for any COPVs, except for you can still use helium to start spinning your pumps initially. You shoot some helium at the turbines, which spins up the fuel pumps. Once they're spinning, then you can start, you know, they kind of start to run themselves through the whole cycle, as I talked about, like in that Raptor video. And so I asked, you know, would they spin start or is it bootstrapped? And Elon said, spin starts from COPVs, so the oxygen and fuel turbines spool up faster in unison. A precise start with full flow stage combustion is very important. And I said, it'd be cool to see Tesla motor, if Tesla motors were powerful enough to spin start, have you moved on to direct drive / electromechanical on the body flaps with motors, or are you still spinning a pump for seal number one? And oh, by the way, he changed it. Now we have Mark 1 and Mark 2. We're kind of the two prototypes that were, you know, Mark 1 lost its top down in Boca Chica. And then Mark 2 was the one being built in Florida. And now they moved on to, they're just calling it serial number one now. So Mark 3, what we're calling Mark 3, is now serial number one. Just to make things very confusing. Sure. So there you go. So now serial number one is the one where they're going to move on. At the end of the interview that I had with him, we were talking about the... they had Tesla batteries and Tesla motors in the nose of Starship, and those were powering pumps to move the flaps around. Yeah. Yep, and he actually said that they're on this one, though. They're going to direct drive using several Tesla Plaid motors in parallel for serial number one. So they'll have multiple motors in line to move these giant flaps. And he said, simpler, lighter, and more fault tolerant. Rear flaps each need 1.5 megawatts. Ooh. It's like moving the entire wing of an aircraft.
Wow. Jeez.
How cool is that? So I just thought that was awesome. So they're going to be basically just maybe a gear reduction or something, but connected to just Tesla motors that will move those giant flaps around. And I just think that's like the coolest thing ever. Yeah. So they're actually working on that already for this version that we're seeing be built right now. And I said, are there separate subsystems and motors for redundancy on each flap too? I'd love to see, you know, Tesla parts on rockets. I just think that's the coolest, blah, blah, blah. And Elon said, yeah, there's separate subsystems. So that will be full redundancy right there. Like that's, you know, that's one of those things that I talked about in that Starship abort video is like, you know, what happens if one of those flaps fail? Well, here we're having a system where there's literally going to be redundant, you know, different motors, probably even maybe potentially different controllers and all this stuff. On their own system, so that if one fails, you have a totally separate backup system. I just think that's super cool, and we're actually seeing it like happen already.
Well, I feel like everything has to be redundant on a spaceship, especially if it's going to have people on it. Like you can't have anything just be the only one, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And especially, you know, when it has to use those body flaps for not only surviving reentry, but also that last like landing maneuver and everything. I mean, there's a lot of critical points where can't have those babies lock up and get stuck or anything like that, you know? So pretty cool stuff. That stuff all made me smile. That was one of those, like, he was clearly sitting there hanging out, you know, waiting for something to happen or something and just excited to answer questions. So I love it when we get that, Elon.
Well, and I liked in that video that you showed from Twitter, like of those domes, they just look like UFOs. I mean,
they're just out there building.
It looks
UFOs.
Like a movie set or something.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. So there you go.
Now, with that, is the Plaid motor a different motor?
He kind of made it sound like that, didn't he?
Right. That's kind of. I thought the Plaid it was just like a tri-motor design, essentially.
How would you think about that? It has to be a new motor because how are you going to stick two of those beefy motors that are currently, you know, on the rear axle?
Yeah.
You'd basically be redesigning that motor pack to be able to fit two of them, you know, one per wheel or something on the back.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it never that never dawned on me that it would actually be a different motor.
Yeah.
Super cool. Yeah.
I'm curious what the differences are between the permanent magnet design and all that.
It's probably similar, just like a smaller, like to fit is probably the deal. And then it gives you more control, I'm sure, is really the probably the main advantage. I don't know that.
And two of them, so more power.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but also like hitting around a track or something, I'm sure it'll just give you more fine grain.
Mm-hmm. So that brings us into the last time I'm going to do Why Don't They Just, because I'm officially handing the baton over to you, Joe.
Are you calling make it public?
Man.
Yep. We're doing it public. Joe, you're going to be in charge of Why Don't They Just for the remainder of
the
year.
I've really been enjoying not having any responsibilities for this thing.
You're the host.
I just feel like, well, and here's the problem. I just end up always picking ones that I know the answer to. So it just turns into a Tim Dodd jerkathon where I'm just like, oh, here you go, guys. Answer my question.
The thing
and
is,
I'm going to tell
people,
you why you're wrong.
Why don't they just to me? Then nobody will know the answer. Because. I don't know.
That's
anything.
Not true. First off, that's not true. And second off, that might be fun too if we're all having to like figure it out more together. Huh?
Whatever, move on. I don't know. What is this? Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do
that? Okay, anyway, this comes from FK on Twitter at FEDork77. So, our ludicrous future, why don't they just make Starship Canard? So, the body flaps we were just talking about. And lower flaps, all the flaps. Why don't they make it so they have the same curvature as the fuselage so that they can fold completely flat for takeoff? As in, like, imagine that they were, like, curved, basically. And so if they tucked them all the way in, it'd actually be totally smooth, you know, like, matching the curve of the vehicle. So you almost couldn't even tell they're there. And then when you deploy them, they, like, roll out and, you know, and we're flaps, but in general, they're like kind of curved to match the, does that make sense?
I understand, but I don't see the point in that.
I imagine maybe less surface area to cause friction as it comes out of the atmosphere or something, or as it's going up.
That's what I'm wondering. Does it really? Because in terms of aerodynamics, isn't it more about the shape of it? Because the air, it's going to be hitting it regardless. And then what about the whole belly flop maneuver? It would probably trick that whole thing up if they were curved, right? Seems like it. I don't know if it would gain you much on the aerodynamics going up, and then it may make things harder on the whole weird pendulum belly flop thing.
I think you guys pretty much nailed it. Especially the thing to remember with especially hypersonic regimes is air does some weird things, like really weird, because it can't get out of its own way. So like the way those wakes are and stuff, it just is like unbelievably complex and really weird. So I would imagine that that's probably the main reason is like that reentry regime. Like you can't really have curved things like that. They won't act in the way you think. So all of a sudden you lose your control authority and the way that it is able to control itself. Would be my main guess. And the other reason is probably it just doesn't have that big of an advantage and makes it a lot harder to manufacture those curves now and all, you know, just that whole, like, it's probably works fine the way they have it, and it probably doesn't need to be done, is
it's the
short answer.
Yeah, so instead of why don't they just, it's, like, I think a good why don't they just has to have an extremely obvious reason, like, benefit if it were to work. Like, why don't they make EVs out of solar panels? It's like, well, okay, fine. There are good reasons why not. But yeah, if they could, that would be amazing if it did what you think it would do. This one doesn't sound.
Yeah, this is almost more like, why would they just?
Exactly.
Almost,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. You're kind of just adding something that doesn't really net much of a benefit, potentially.
Added complexity.
Yeah, or just totally changing it for, I don't know. I think I might have made a bigger deal out of the fact that the flaps are way up there at the nose, you know, like while flying. It just seems to me like that's a bad place to have a bigger aerodynamic feature. And I always keep thinking they need to be tucked in. They apparently don't need to be, but I'm no rocket scientist, so there you go.
Well, I think the
space shuttle went up and had big wings and.
But those were in the back and in the bottom of the vehicle. Imagine if that was on top of the rocket, if it started to go a little bit off course, those wings would go and like just totally try to flip the vehicle around. And that's the whole thing about center of lift and center of pressure needing to be behind your center of mass. The whole like art of flight, basically. Yeah. So that's what makes me a little nervous, or like, that's just the thing that I'm still like, how are they not going to tuck those in on ascent?
Yeah.
Because you have, if it goes, you know, off angle at all, think about how much that wind, you have all that moment arm, that leverage, that's just going to totally try to flip it. And it becomes a feedback loop, because if it goes like 3 degrees off course, all of a sudden it's pushing more, which then pushes it more off course, which increases the amount of, you know, just, and it can totally get out of the, you know.
And
so that's my concern. Elon said over and over that it's not a big deal. Their animations show the flaps out and deployed during ascent. So I'm just making a big deal of nothing.
And then, and if all that happens, you have some dude at, you know, Capcom there standing around like this. Well, you know, wondering what's happening.
It's the
waving
flaps,
his
man.
Arms.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap that up. So I want to know, let's finish up with the old, what are you guys looking forward? What are you doing for a video? And at the same time, answer what you're most looking forward to this year.
Joe.
Oh, sorry, me. Well, so Monday's video, well, today's video that just came out this morning, so this is Thursday, was basically talking about some of the crazier predictions that people have made about what 2020 would look like today. Everything from all of our stuff being made out of steel to us not having tea or coffee anymore to apes driving us around as chauffeurs. And the thing about that one that kills me was it was made in 1994. Like, it wasn't made 100 years ago. It was made when Seinfeld was on TV. They thought that would be a thing.
That's funny.
So we haven't seen that come to pass. But Monday's video actually is going to be on LopG, the gateway.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good idea? Is it not a good idea? How would it work? Mm-hmm. What's you know the purpose of it? The weird orbit that it takes, which is insane. So all about that. It's a pretty interesting topic. But in terms of what I'm looking forward to for this coming year, I mean, I'm excited about seeing Model Y coming out. I'm excited about seeing some people launching from the United States into space again. And I would really like to see Starship, like, even just in a prototype fashion, in a Roadster. Oh, and the Mars 2020 rover. They're going to name that at some point this year. They're going to have to.
Yeah.
So, stuff like that.
It's a big year. Oh, what about you, Ben?
I'm looking forward. Well, next week, what is next week? Next week is CES, so I'll be gone all
week. Next week's
a
new decade.
Hmm?
Next week's a new decade.
That's right. So the Q4 numbers should be coming out next week. Usually it's like on a Tuesday afternoon, so I'll conveniently be driving to Las Vegas at that point, so hopefully I'll be able to have a video prepped and then get there, plug in some numbers, do some voiceover stuff, and get that video out. So that'll hopefully be next week's video. I also have been testing this thing called a Roadie. Have you guys seen that? Where you can wirelessly connect to it and watch your Sentry mode clips.
Oh.
From your phone. Yeah, so I just got done testing that. It's pretty cool. It's almost exactly what I was looking to build. I have actually, this is not an angle you usually see, but there's actually some hardware here. It's called a Jetson Nano, little like Raspberry Pi kind of thing. I was working on something like that and then, you know, YouTube. So didn't get to it, but this guy made them and I just got done testing it. So that'll be coming out soon. Overall 2020, yeah, Model Y will be a good one. Me and, or Jenny and I have a really big project that I'm still keeping secret, but one that will likely result in a new YouTube channel that she will be much more involved with. So we have something like that coming out. Fully Charged Live in Austin in just a few weeks.
Got to plug that.
Yes. Hanging get your tickets. Out. We're all going to be there.
Yep.
And we're going to do a live recording.
And we still need to book a place. So I know you guys got to do your thing, but let's do that soon. And then I'm doing this big European thing. So I'm going to Fully Charge UK, which is in May.
Cool.
They haven't really invited me yet, but I just decided that I'm going to be there and I'm going. So just count on that. So I'll be in London in May and then probably going to head over to Paris to hang out with my friend Saul Lopez, who also is a Tesla YouTuber in Spanish, though. So guys, if you speak Spanish, go check him out. If not, you won't really get much out of it, I don't think. And then, of course, I want to go down to Madrid, which I just absolutely love Madrid. So probably do like a little European road trip. And maybe Porsche would let me come drive one of their fancy electric cars in Stuttgart doing something. They seem to be pretty cool last time I hung out with them. So, you know,
awesome.
Doing a big European trip, bringing the whole family. So that'll be
cool.
It'll be an operation. So,
yeah. Well, good luck with that. I think for me, the video I'm back to working on now, I'm right back on, literally page one of my pollution video, because I got some peer review from some really, we'll say some of the smartest people in the world. I got some really good peer review, because this is one of those, you know, when you're talking about things like global warming and carbon output and stuff, there's so much misinformation, and I was apparently totally misinterpreting the data. So I got some peer review, as I've been trying to do a better job of doing that. Basically, I'm like, wow, a lot of the stuff that I have already written is totally wrong. So that's fun. So this is already probably a more researched and more in-depth, just because of the nature of it. Yeah. And all that, almost more. Because like the Raptor video, aerospace video, I just had to learn that stuff. Like it's just information that's out there, right? This is like into the world of like, actual research and like almost publishing a paper in a sense. So I'm having it all done over and making sure that I'm right. So I'm not putting out something that might be a popular video having just a bunch of misinformation in it. So trying to do my due diligence. And so I'm still working on that. But for me, so that's what I'm going to be doing probably my next video still, unless I panic and realize that I don't have a video out for 3 months and then make something really hastily on Kerbal Space Program or something. But for me, I'm most looking forward to commercial crew this year will be huge. We'll see. You know, it's still a race between Boeing and SpaceX. If Starship does some kind of flying this year, will be amazing. You're right, Joe, Mars 2020. I'm also looking forward to, I think there's going to be an update with Tesla this year. I think we're going to see battery updates and or interior refresh on Model S and X.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to happen in 2019, so... I'm expecting some big cool things out of Tesla this year. But other than that, like there's a lot of stuff. I'm looking forward to, unplugged or fully charged. I mean, live will be awesome. I'm working on something also in Austin that I'll tell you guys about here once it's totally finalized. But, And then I'm also working on a new studio, like officially. That's very much in the works as we speak. I will give you guys more details about that in our ludicrous future.
Fantastic.
So 2020, it's going to be a really fun year. Well, I think it's going to be way bigger than
for everybody involved here and to everybody listening.
It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, 2018, we saw the most space launches ever. 2019, we saw less than that. 2018 wasn't the most ever. It was the most since 1987 or something. It's some record high in 30 years. Last year, we actually saw a decrease in launches compared to that. But this year's looking like with Starlink and with Rocket Lab ramping up.
Starlink.
And there's going to be so many launches. We're going to get sick of them.
Will Starlink be live this year?
Operational-ish for some very small testing
people,
basically. Yeah. So there you have it, guys.
All right.
So we'll see you guys.
In
our
ludicrous future.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do and you want to kind of help get it out there, you can give us a nice review on any of your podcast streaming platforms, whichever one you use. That kind of helps get it out there. Also, we do have a Patreon set up, so you can join us there at patreon.com/ourludicrousfuture. You can get your name in the credits, meet a whole other group of like-minded people. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate it. We'll see you there.